Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And we're also very happy to have you here on the program once again, Sandy Mason. She is horticulture educator with U of I Extension and deals with things in Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, and Vermilion counties. And for some time now, she has been stopping by here on a regular basis every month to be a resource for you and answer questions about things that grow in the home landscape. So we can talk about trees and shrubs, grass, flowers, vegetables, anything like that, decorative, edible. We can also talk about houseplants. If you have a problem, you can call and tell us about it, and she will do her best to help you out. We'll see what we can do here. Also, one of the things that we've done is we've said, well, if you have a particular place in your yard, you need a plant for that, and maybe you're looking for a suggestion. So you can tell us a little bit about what you might be looking for, what that place is like, and maybe she can suggest something for you to take a look at. Any and all of that is great. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. If you would like to send your question by email, you may do that as well. will-talk@illinois.edu. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank
you.
Being
here once again. We already have a caller, so we'll go right there. Robinson is our caller right here, line number four. Hello.
Good morning, David and Sandra.
Good morning.
I have a couple of things to report that might be of interest to your other listeners. When we had our bad unexpected freeze earlier, I have a giant rose bush called Albertine. It's a rambler from France. And I have trained it till it's 10 feet high and 24 feet wide.
Wow.
And its first flowering after that frost was very disappointing. There were very few flowers, and they were distorted as a remembrance of the freeze that they went through. But now, it's as if the plant had said, well, we had winter, now it's spring again in June, and it is flowering anew, sparsely, true, because many branches got frostbit. But it's a bush that has never in recorded history flowered the second time. So my impression is like that of winter kill and then renewal for spring.
Yeah, interesting. That is very interesting. Sounds like a very impressive plant, too.
Right. It might happen to some of your more northern listeners in years to come if the weird climate that we're experiencing continues. On the second thought, I would like to mention that we've had Japanese beetles very sparsely for the past 2 weeks, and I've been killing everyone I can find on Phil Nixon's theory that if they don't have friends there already eating, they will stay away.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw and promptly killed my first one on Sunday at my house in Monticello. So, yes, they're here and they're early, which we pretty well expected. But so people need to be looking at them now. So you're right.
Well, okay. I just wanted to report those things.
Yeah, thank
thanks
you very much.
General interest. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
And just to follow up on that, I think one of the things that Phil has always said is that Japanese beetles are attracted to plants that have already been fed on by other beetles. So that's why he says if it helps to get on it just as soon as you can. If you see them, deal with them right away. Okay. And one of the easiest ways is just to get yourself a big bucket of soapy water. And if you hold it under the plant, all you have to do is disturb them a little bit. They'll just fall right off.
Right.
So that actually is, you can actually collect a lot. I've done it. You can collect a lot of beetles that way.
Yeah. If in early, when there's just a few, it works really well. And one of the things that I've found it works really great are those large coffee containers, those plastic coffee containers, because they have a, you know, that where coffee grounds come in. And because they have a nice handle and nice lid. And so you sort of hold it underneath the stem and then hit with the lid, and it works really well. And I will tell you, it also works better like early in the morning when it's still a little cool. As they get, when it gets warmer, they have a tendency to fly instead of fall. So, and you want them to fall.
Yes.
But, so this is a good thing to do, you know?
Yeah. I haven't seen any yet in my yard. Maybe I'm not looking closely enough.
We've had a couple of master gardeners say that they've seen them around town. And I always have, and there's usually these indicator plants. And for me, as in those are the first ones that always get hit. And those are always the ones I look at first. And for me, it's always this white rose. I have this one large white rugosa rose, and they always show up on that one first for some reason. And then the other, and then I have another rose that usually is not far behind that white one. So usually if you watch those indicator plants, you can figure out pretty quick whether they're in your yard or not.
I think I must be pretty lucky that I don't seem to have a lot of things that they like, although you've seen my yard. It's a little jungly. And one of the things that, that it seems like the thing that they enjoy the most is Virginia creeper.
Yeah.
They like it
a lot.
Funny? And I guess that's kind of okay. If they want to eat the creeper, you know, that's sort of okay with me.
Yes.
But I just I would generally try to get rid of them if I saw them.
Yeah, so it really is one of those things. And I think that's true for all the insects. I guess maybe I shouldn't say that as a blanket statement, but for a lot of the insects, we're certainly seeing them earlier than normal because of that warm spell we had in March. And bagworms are the other ones that people need to look out for right now, because they're about, actually, the little guys are out there. The caterpillars are out there, and they're about a fourth of an inch, maybe even a little bit bigger at this point on. And again, those same plants that maybe you might have seen a few bags in the past years, you really need to start looking at those and really plan on spraying for those here.
Yeah. This is something that I'm just not paying attention. Someone called attention to me that I had a pine tree in my front yard that had a bunch of bags on it. And the thing about them is they look like something that should be on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's very crafty of them.
They sort of look
like something that would belong on the tree. But once someone says, no, this is it, what you're looking for, then it's really obvious. And you pick them off. I picked off as many as I could reach, and there were quite a few. So I guess that's it's not too late to go out there and pick them if you see them?
Well, it probably at this point, as far as the mature bags from last year, probably most of those have emerged. I mean, you certainly, maybe it'll make you feel better, I don't know, to get off those old bags.
Yeah.
But probably just spend time actually spraying. The good news is we do have some products that are really quite good for these early bagworms. And the BT products, that Bacillus thuringiensis. Mm-hmm. And you can get it as Thuricide, Caterpillar Attack. There's a bunch of those out there. It's toxic to caterpillars, but at least toxic to other animals and stuff that are out there. And then typically we probably wouldn't be seeing other caterpillars that we would like to keep on pines and spruces and stuff. But yeah, don't be surprised. And actually, I've seen them on, they'll certainly even get on things like, because they'll actually travel. They balloon out, and I know Phil has probably talked about this, when they're quite young, they actually balloon out, and they'll travel on the wind to other plants. And so you'll even see them on things like maples and, you know, things you typically wouldn't see. They're not a problem on maples, because those deciduous plants do a really good job of leafing out, and they're fine, not like evergreens. But they will serve as a source of infection for all your other plants, maybe your evergreens. So you do have to even look around. I've seen them on crab apples. I've seen them on any number of other plants. They just usually don't cause the harm, but certainly can be harbingers of bad news.
All right. Well, let's talk to somebody else here. Orland Park, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
At my father's house, he's dealing with a 35-year-old Crimson King maple. And I saw the tree a couple weeks ago. The leaves really did not come out fully like they have in the past. They're actually quite small, and the tree looks sparse. And speaking with him in the last couple of days, he said the leaves are now starting to drop, and that there is a crack in the bark at the base of the tree. Just wanted to see if your guests might have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, we actually have seen or had a number of calls where people talking about and Crimson Kings, for some reason, we've seen a lot of, and it's a Norway maple. It's actually a cultivar of Norway maple. And it seems to be Crimson Kings. So the ones that keep popping up as the ones that are having real issues. So I guess we kind of have to look at a couple of different things. You know, they're called Norway maples for a reason. They're native to more northern areas than we have. So they don't particularly like hot, dry weather, which we certainly have had, and certainly have had really over the last couple of years. We've had dry spells, we've had wet spells, but we certainly have had some dry spells. So I wonder if some of that isn't sort of setting these trees up for some real stressful situations. And it could be the crack in the bark, unfortunately, is one of those things that's hard to say exactly what caused it. As young trees, sometimes they'll get frost cracks when the bark is quite thin. They'll get these frost cracks, and it doesn't really show up till later on as the bark sort of expands and it kind of cracks and we notice it more. Generally, you can always tell an old wound. If you look at the side edge of the wound, it'll roll in. The tissue rolls in. And if it's rolling in, that means that's an old wound and the tree's doing what it needs to do to sort of heal over, so to speak.
So his best bet might be what, just adequate watering underneath the canopy, you know, the
drip line? Absolutely. I would try and do that. Is it mulched at all? Is it like wood chip mulch or anything underneath
it?
No,
it's not. It's in the middle of his backyard.
Okay. You might try and water it as best you can. Is there dieback of branches as well? Or it just seems like it's sort of overall?
Just overall. It looked, you know, actually I got the same thing at my house on a Queen Anne. But now in that case, that tree is, once again, is 30 years old, and it's sitting next to the street. Mm-hmm. I could see because of the asphalt and the added heat there, and I've been just, you know, watering the heck out of that, and it does seem to be coming back. So.
Yeah. So I'm guessing because we're getting so many questions about that particular plant, I really am thinking it's because it was, you know, so warm in March. It just really kind of set them up to be under pretty stressful conditions. They do get a verticillium wilt, which is a fungal wilt disease that we do often see in Crimson Kings. But usually you'll see dieback of branches. You know, one whole branch will die back, and then the next year another branch will die back. So it usually shows up a little bit differently than just sort of overall decline. So I think probably the best bet right now is just to give it some water and then kind of go from there. I don't think there's anything necessarily infectious that you can do anything about, I guess is my point.
Okay, so what, water good for, say, a couple of days and then what, maybe a week later?
Let
it go longer in between?
Yeah, a lot of it, of course, if we get these hot, dry winds, like we've had a couple of days worth, then certainly, you know, if you could get a good drink once a week, usually we say about an inch of water a week really works out pretty well. And usually within the drip line, and I know in a 35-year-old tree that gets pretty big, but you're really trying to get those roots that are probably beyond just the trunk. In other words, don't just water right at the trunk.
Of course.
So water kind of that general area underneath the tree, and then an inch of water a week is usually going to be fine to sort of get them going.
Okay, real good.
Okay,
thanks
well, good luck.
Help.
I know.
All right, thanks for the call.
Other
folks are certainly welcome. This is our monthly lawn and garden care program. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension. And questions about things that grow in the home landscape, that's what we're doing here, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have someone who called in, didn't want to ask their question on the air, but we're hoping that maybe you could talk about squash bugs. Apparently, they got a problem with them.
And squash bugs are tough. You know, they call them squash bugs because they get on squash and all those kind of cucurbits in that family. Yeah. I think they should call them squash bugs because that's the best way to take care of them.
squash them.
Or if you're from the Midwest, squash them.
The bugs need squashed.
Yeah. Because we just really don't have particularly good controls for those guys, unfortunately, when it comes to insecticides. So, but the one thing you can find, and I'm being kind of silly here, but actually one of the things you can do is they lay their eggs on the undersides of the leaves. And I know it's very time-consuming to kind of take care of it that way, but check on the undersides of the leaves of your cucurbit. So things like squash and cucumber and all those kind of guys that are kind of those viney kind of things. Check underneath the leaves, and you'll see them in clusters. And then just squish them then. You can squish them then. Squish them as eggs. Those are pretty easy to do at that point. You can also do some things. Actually, sometimes if you actually just put something like a board or something, cardboard or something in the garden, sometimes it'll actually collect underneath them. So usually it's a matter of just trying to collect them and then deal with them that way. again, we're sort of back to the whole thing, like with Japanese beetles. If you don't have very many of them, that works out fine, and, you know, you can sort of take care of them that way. But if you have a lot of them, then it gets to be a real issue that way. So we just don't really have any good insecticides that are going to do a really, really good job on squash bugs. But so can
so
I deal
physical
with that
removal.
Physical,
about,
yeah, squash them.
Squash them. Okay.
Squash them.
I have an email question here. This is a little beyond the scope of the what we're doing, but maybe I'll ask anyway. For someone who was interested in the trees in the brownfield woods, you're familiar with mm-hmm. brownfield woods.
Mm-hmm.
He says that the person who's writing says that there are some that are really large, have very large trunks, and I don't know if that means trees that have been cut down and there's something left, or these are existing trees. Anyway, the person was wondering if you knew if the circumference of these big trees had been measured and how this person could get that information.
I would just check with the University of Illinois, and those are actually owned by the University of Illinois, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay.
And I would check with the Illinois Natural History Survey, because that actually, those are plots, Trelease and Brownfield are areas that have been studied, I think, quite readily, and there are some stewards and stuff out there. So I think if you check with the Natural History Survey, and I'm afraid I don't have a person in particular that could help you, I just check with the Natural History Survey and start asking about that.
Okay.
And you might even be able to find it online.
Well, I was sort of noodling around. I guess I did. The Grand Prairie Friends has some involvement. It says that they assist in the management.
Right,
so I guess
right.
It's possible that somebody associated with that organization
right.
might be able to
right.
help.
But I would check with the Natural History Survey, Illinois Natural History Survey, and or the Prairie Institute.
Okay.
And kind of see where, but I'm sure they're probably absolutely right that there is information out there on them.
Okay. Hope that helps.
And actually, I was checking a little bit more, and I thought, you know, I just said there really wasn't much in the way of control for squash bugs.
Yeah.
There is, there's not much in the way of maybe organic kinds of things, but permethrin is one of the things that is listed. I just checked just to make sure and then realized. So, and that is a pyrethroid that could be used, so permethrin.
Okay. Back to the phones, I think, and we'll talk with somebody in Urbana. Line number one right here. Hello.
Hello. I've got some property with some big old oak trees, and they're doing fine, but honeysuckle shrubs just everywhere. And all I really have time to do is chainsaw the honeysuckle, and I'm wondering if there's something safe that I can treat the stumps with that won't transfer over and hurt the oaks.
Right, right. Well, there are some things. I'd probably go with some of the brush killers, and then you can do it as a cut surface treatment, if you know what I mean, where you actually cut it and then you immediately paint it on. And then you can do it a very, you know, selective area, and you don't have to do it to run off. You just want to wet the surface, so you don't have to do much.
Okay.
I would go that route. Yeah. Honeysuckles are big issue.
What would a safe product or type of chemical be for the surface?
Well, it's going to be like Brush Be Gone, something like that. And it's triclopyr, I think, is actually the chemical that's in that.
All right.
So,
and that won't spread by the roots like Roundup does?
Well, actually, Roundup doesn't spread by roots either. Roundup's actually the glyphosate products, which is what's in Roundup, are actually tied up very quickly in organic matter, so it doesn't move in the soil like some of the other ones do.
I've had the experience of spraying a dandelion and having a huge dead circle around it.
They pretty much kill everything. I mean, that's the whole idea of those glyphosate Roundup type products, is that they're non-selective. They don't know the difference between a good stuff and a bad stuff. So it's whatever's there, they will definitely kill it off. And you certainly, if you already have the glyphosate products, you certainly could do that on the honeysuckle as well as a cut surface treatment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Again, questions welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, I was looking at some of your recent homeowners columns, and the one for June 7th here really caught my eye because it's been kind of dry here. And I've been trying to pay attention to this because I think last year, particularly as the summer wore on, I was not doing a very good job at keeping things watered. And, you know, by the way we got into August, it just looked terrible. Everything
mm-hmm,
looked terrible.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I'm pointing out this column where that the headline on the column is "Good Gardener Equals Good Waterer." You write, to be a good gardener, you have to be a good waterer. The when and how of watering is as mysterious to novice gardeners as the attraction to reality TV is to you.
Just a little social comment there.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, though, but I thought this would be a good thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Particularly now because just recently it seems to have been fairly dry, and then of course we get these torrential downpours, and then a week, 10 days, 2 weeks can go by, and we get nothing.
Right. Right, right. Well, I think part of it is a sort of, you almost have to look at it as kind of a triage kind of a thing. You have to figure out what are the plants that are really going to need the most water at any one time, and over a period of time, I guess I should say. And so anything that's new, and I would especially say anything that's hard to replace, as in, trees are harder to replace for us, as in, you can't, this gentleman's talking about a 35-year-old tree. Well, you can't replace that, not with the same size tree. So we think about those kinds of things. Is there something that I can really help out by watering this thing because it's hard to replace? Lawns, I know people like green lawns, but, in the bottom line, most of the time you can replace a lawn faster, easier than you replace a tree. So you kind of have to sort of think through those things on what is easier to replace. And what needs water, and those would be things like, especially if you planted any trees and shrubs over the last 2 to 3 years, those are still young plants. They don't have an established root system. So those would be one. So I'd be thinking about trees and shrubs, things that are maybe a little bit harder to replace. Perennials, love them, easier to replace. So if you really have to get down to that line on what gets water, what doesn't. Also, the other things on vegetables, especially any vegetable that's actually producing a fruit, especially things like tomatoes and peppers that actually produce a fruit. While they're producing those fruits, they need more water. So it's usually we think of, I mentioned, an inch of water a week, and that's just really kind of a rule of green thumb. An inch of water a week for most plants does a pretty good job. Now, if we have other plants, you think of some of the prairie plants and stuff that have really extensive root systems, prairie dock, 13-foot long root system. I mean, that's just an amazing thing to think about for a perennial. Those are obviously can go a lot longer, and they're not going to need the water that some of the other plants will. So I think about new plants. I think about things you can't replace as easily. Maybe some plants that actually need more water than others for whatever reasons. I love hydrangeas, but I will tell you, they're water hogs. They love water, and they will mope and weep and, wilt and everything else, and they'll tell you that I'm not a happy shrub. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of think through that. Is that, maybe that's not a plant I want because, I have some of them, but I don't have a lot of them because I don't want to have to worry about watering them. So I think you kind of have to sort of think through those things to see how that works for you. And also just better at watering, as in, those overhead sprinklers. I love to watch them. I love to run through them and all that kind of stuff. But they're a pretty inefficient way to water most things, except for a lawn. Then it makes sense because you lose a lot of water through evaporation. So they're not the best way to water your vegetable garden. You're much better if you can keep the leaves dry in a vegetable garden. We have all kinds of tomato diseases and all kinds of other diseases that are caused by wet foliage. You want to keep that dry as best you can. So use things like soaker hoses or just water them by hand and just water, just that root area. So kind of think through those things. Mulching always helps, keeps down the soil temperatures, keeps in the moisture. So all those things are going to kind of help you think through it. And I will tell you, I've gotten to the point now, and I'm probably one of those strange people. I actually don't have a dishwasher. The dishwasher is me.
Yes. I have one of those at my house.
You have one of those at your house, too. And so I actually collect the rinse water, when I'm doing dishes. Yeah. And I use that water, what's called gray water. And it's really pretty darn clean water. I don't use it on my vegetables, but I use it on my flowers. So I use that water on my flowers. I use the clean, good stuff, I guess we'll say, on my vegetables and other plants. So you'd be surprised sometimes that some of that really, just rinsing out a cup. It's good water. There's nothing wrong with that, but we just let it go down the drain. So if you kind of collect some of that and then use that to water your flowers, I think that's another great thing. Because I always feel bad on, I'm watering this plant, but I'm not watering that one. I always feel bad for the other one that's not getting any water.
And don't think that plant doesn't feel bad.
That plant feels bad too.
That plant knows you love the other plant better.
You try to spread the love. So thinking about through a little bit on the gray water. So I think there's a lot of things that we can sort of, does this really make sense? This is, plant selection, not maybe having those plants that need a lot of water. Impatiens are another one of those that need a lot of water.
Well, that isn't it. That's part goes back to this thing that a lot of these things that we grow as annuals, flowers that we like for color, they're tropical kind of tropical plant, so you have to make sure that they get watered.
Right. And the one thing with annuals, of course, you know, I love using annuals. I love having them, but they don't have the extensive root system. They're not like perennials because they've only been there for a short period of time. So, of course, they're not going to have extensive root systems. So we tend to have to water annuals more often than some of the other plants. So that's when I use my gray water. I use that on the annuals, so then I don't feel so bad on using that water.
Okay. And just going to this issue of not wanting to have foliage wet, how are you on this old thing about how you really shouldn't water in the afternoon because you want the plants to dry out? If you're going to do it, you should water in the morning.
Yeah, ideally, watering the morning is really the best bet. Especially, you have less evaporation issues, you know, if you are doing any overhead sprinkling. It does let the foliage then have plenty of time to dry during the day so it isn't wet. Because we know that in the evening, when the temperature drops and the foliage is wet, that's sort of setting these diseases up for just a perfect opportunity to infect. A lot of these are fungi, and they love that sort of cooler, little bit of cooler temperature, wet leaves. It's perfect for them to infect. So don't do that to your plants. Sort of try to take care of it by keeping the... So that really is an important thing. But I will tell you, if a plant is wilting, weeping, looking bad, and it's 6 o'clock at night, water it. Just go ahead and water it. You're better off.
Don't say to it, sorry.
Don't say sorry.
You've got
to wait
till
the morning. Take
a
number, buddy, because your time is not here. So go ahead and water them. And some interesting stuff came out. People were so concerned about, you know, if I water in the afternoon, then somehow the droplets of water will, like, burn the foliage. You remember this? This was from a few years, you know, this kind of resurfaces.
What, like a magnifying glass?
Yes. So obviously you haven't quite heard this little thing.
I guess not.
That came out, and it sort of resurfaces every once in a while. Maybe it's one of those sort of urban myth things. But it really is not an issue. The only time they ever found that to happen is on really fuzzy-leafed plants, that maybe there might be an issue with somehow this magnifying effect of the water droplets.
That's a new one on me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Community Blood Services of Illinois. Blood donations help save the lives of the injured and critically ill. There are no substitutes for donated blood, and donation takes only 45 minutes. Blood donation. It's about life. More information is at 367-2202.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, 10 different topics every week. In the second hour today, the guest is historian Peter Stearns from George Mason University. We will be talking about his book, Satisfaction Not Guaranteed, talking about why it is that although there's a lot of progress that has come in people's lives in the last, say, 100 or 200 years, things that have made life better, why is it that generally levels of satisfaction with life, particularly in industrialized, affluent countries, aren't higher? That's the question. Tomorrow morning at 10, we'll talk about political corruption in the state of Illinois with Dave Morrison from the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform and Dick Simpson, who is professor of political science at U of I Chicago. Also, we will talk with poet and journalist Ananda Rose about her book Showdown in the Sonoran Desert. The subtitle is Religion, Law, and the Immigration Controversy, and it takes a look at both sides of the controversy surrounding illegal immigration and talks a little bit, tries to explore what the motivation of people on both sides are. That is, people who are trying to help the illegals and people who are trying to keep them out. That's just what we'll do tomorrow, and you can find out what's up for the rest of the week by looking at the schedule. That's on our website. It's will.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter, Will Public Media. In this hour of Focus, our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign, Ford, Iroquois, and Vermilion counties. Once a month, she is here on the program, always on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care. So if everybody must be out working in the yard...
It's a beautiful day.
It's a lovely day to be outside. But if you have some questions for us, give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And if you want, you could send an email, and that's will-talk, W-I-L-L-talk, at illinois.edu. Something you want to mention?
Well, we do have a new book.
Yes.
And maybe Phil has mentioned that. I don't know if you've had Phil on recently.
Yeah, he was here a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. And he didn't promote his book.
No, he didn't.
Actually, this is a new publication. This is actually an updated version. We've had the Home Yard and Garden Pest Guide, and I think the last year was 2008. Mm-hmm. And this is the new one, but now it has a little bit different name. It's Pest Management for the Home Landscape. It is a U of I Extension publication. And the nice thing is this is something that we use regularly in our office, and it was one I just checked about squash bugs. I just wanted to make sure about insecticides on that. And you can actually get it online at pubsplus.illinois.edu, and it lists everything from insects and diseases on everything from vegetables to flowers to fruits to trees, all kinds of things. And it's a wealth of information. And the thing I like about it is not only is it just a wealth of information, but it also lists things, and it's not just insecticides or mm-hmm. pesticides or fungicides, whatever. It also lists some of the things that we can do just on a management basis. Like I mentioned with the squash bugs, actually putting out boards and sort of collecting the as the insects go under those boards, you can collect the insects at that night. So it's non-chemical stuff as well. So it kind of gives you maybe a little broader perspective on how to take care of things. It's not only just a matter of pulling out a pesticide. And so I think it's a great publication. It is $25, so maybe for some people they might consider that a little pricey. But I think for anybody who's in the landscaping business or, you know, anything where you do certainly do gardening, horticulture as a business, I think they should all have it. But if you really just have a large landscape and want more info, it's called Pest Management for the Home Landscape through the U of I Extension.
Okay, good. And there are all kinds of great information resources, paper books on growing things, on how to plan a landscape for your yard, you know, how to think about that. If you want to grow fruit, there's stuff that's just about growing fruit. There's things about that try to help you pick out plants that are perfectly suited for the conditions that we have here in East Central Illinois. Now, all that kind of stuff, it's great stuff and not terribly expensive. Well, people could see what's there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can actually go to the University of Illinois Extension website. We actually have a very extensive horticulture section on everything from water gardens to ornamental grasses to perennials, you name it. I think it's really a good website.
Okay. We have some more calls here. Let's talk with them. And first is Urbana, line one.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I have some knockout roses along the side of my house, and they're probably about 4 years old, and they've grown nicely, whatever. But this year they've gotten absolutely huge. And I guess for some reason I always thought they'd be small and shrubby. And someone told me I should just top them off every year. So I guess I'm asking you if that's good advice or do you have different advice?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think they need pruning every year, you know, unless you just really want them to get big. I think they're one of those plants that I think we all thought might be a little bit smaller, but they're really big. I've seen them easily 4 feet tall and 4 feet wide. I mean, they really can get quite large. And if that doesn't fit the space, I absolutely would do pruning in the spring. And maybe not top them off, but just sort of some selective pruning just to make them a little bit shorter. And then they won't get quite so out of bounds. You could do a light pruning now if you just really feel like, oh, my gosh, these guys are getting too big.
I couldn't get through. So I don't know if I destroyed anything.
No.
So I guess I tried to do the minimal I could and live with it for right now, but is fall the best time?
We probably don't do a lot of, probably the heaviest pruning ought to be done in the spring, like in April. If you're really going to do some heavy pruning, I'd probably wait until then. Any kind of light pruning, and as in, you know, those guys tend to be pretty darn tough from what I've seen. So the only reason I'm hesitating a little bit is simply because it's been so dry. If you've been able to water, you know, if you want to do some, you know, fairly heavy pruning, like taking off, you know, 10 inches or so, I might at least give them a little bit of water to try to sort of recover from that. But seems like you can do some pretty heavy pruning. I wouldn't do severe pruning probably in the fall, to be honest with you.
Okay. That sounds good.
Okay.
It's just they weren't that tall in the spring.
Yeah.
Nice and manageable.
I know. But they really, once they get established, knockout roses just go crazy.
They're gorgeous. I mean.
Yeah, they bloom their little hearts out. That's why it's hard to prune them right now or any time except in the spring because they're blooming so much.
Yes.
So,
okay, well,
good
that's
luck.
Helpful. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, sure.
Right, very good. Thank you. Well, we'll go next to someone on a cell phone. This is line two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two questions about two trees. They're both oak. The first one is has these growths on them that are round and hard. They look like almost like tumors on the branches.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, will this kill the tree? And second, is it contagious to other trees? And what do I do about it?
Yeah, and you said these are oaks, I assume?
Yeah, they're oaks.
Yeah.
Well, this one is an oak. I have a second question about another oak, but yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like galls, which are,
yeah,
they're actually, and when you say tumor, you're not far off. And actually, they were studied quite regularly trying to understand human tumors because it is this proliferation of cells. And it's not quite the same thing as a human tumor, but it's the whole idea that it's actually plant material. It's part of the plant, but because of insect, they actually lay their eggs. And because of that action, then they sort of form these like tumor-like things, like you say, over the insect. So it's really kind of an interesting thing. It's not going to kill the tree. Sometimes you'll see branch die back because you have these growths on there, and then everything dies like right past that. It kind of kills off that twig or whatever. So typically, it's not anything that we worry about all that much. And oaks seem to. Pardon?
It's got tons of them.
I know. And but it seems like it's just one of those things. And oaks seem to have lots of galls that are associated with them.
Okay.
And actually, it's very hard. It would be very hard to spray for them because you'd have to spray at that very, very early stage. Once they're inside that growth, you know, the insect is so well protected, it's not going to be affected to try to do a whole lot with it. So it's one of those wonderful nature things that we just sit back and enjoy, right?
Okay. Well, I have a question about another oak then. It's a huge oak. It's probably about 4 or 5 feet at the base in diameter. And it's got an opening on one side where animals actually burrow and build their, I guess, nests in there.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, will this kill the tree? Is this something that will eventually, I don't know, destroy it? Should I be worried about that? Because there's possums that nest in there. I've seen snakes go in there and nest. I found snake skins coming out of there sometimes.
What's a whole, a whole
complex
city.
Ecosystem right there.
Really complex ecosystem right inside the oak. Now it really
habitat.
Yeah, you got your own little habitat. So the possum snakes are another issue, obviously, but it really isn't a matter of, you know, this is quite natural for trees to get these kind of hollow areas, and it was probably from an old wound way back when. We always think about, you know, once these guys get really big, the inside of the tree, that kind of heartwood stuff, for the most part, is dead wood anyway. They're really live just on the outside edge for the most part. So it's really, I'm not sure, you know, unless it just the whole possum snake thing bothers you, I really wouldn't worry about it.
Oh, no, it doesn't bother me. I mean, I want to keep it because I want the animals to be able to have a place to live.
Yeah, which is great.
Okay, then that's great.
Yeah, so don't worry about it. Yeah.
All right, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. On to line number 3, and this is someone who is in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a question about a gardenia. I got one at Sam's a few weeks ago, and it's got spider mites.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been spraying it with first I tried a regular insecticide, and that really didn't do anything. So then I tried the plant soap.
Mm-hmm.
And I must not be getting it soaked enough because there's fewer, but they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, should I just take it outside and just completely soak the whole plant? Would that be the best thing to do, or...
Yeah, I would probably take it outside, and then just when you say soak it, I'd probably just really get good coverage with a spray. And you really need to get on the undersides of the leaves because that's one of the big problems. And so I assume it's a small enough plant that you can even, I've done this before, where you kind of tip them upside down, and then you can spray on the underside of the leaves really well.
Okay.
And with
plant soap?
Yeah, insecticidal soap is actually quite good for spider mites.
Okay, because... when I went around to different stores, a lot of them you'd ask for plant soap and they'd look at you like you're crazy. But it should have an insecticide. Yeah, this says insect disease and mite control. So.
But then it says.
It doesn't look like it has an insecticide in it.
Well, the insecticidal soap is the insecticide.
Okay.
It's just specially formulated soap. It's not the typical soap like we think with dishwater detergent and stuff, but right. It's truly a soap, so insecticidal soap. Mm-hmm. And then it's actually, it's very good for soft-bodied insects like spider mites and stuff. So it's, and the nice thing is it's least toxic for us as well and for other animals. So we like using insecticidal soap. But I will tell you, it's strictly sort of contact killer, as in it only kills what it hits.
Right, and that's the hard part inside because I get it all over everything.
Yeah, so I'd take it outside. It's great weather. I'd take it outside, kind of flip the plant over, give it a good drench, and then I would probably, you know, read the label, but usually it'll say within 5 to 7 days you do a second application.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to save it. I love gardenias,
I know.
But I've never had any successes.
Well, you are not alone. Gardenias are really tough plants to get going, to tell you the truth. They're a little finicky. They like to be moist, but not overly moist. They like good humidity. They like, you know, they like. They're kind of divas of the plant world. They really are. So don't feel bad if it doesn't quite make it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. And we'll go again to another caller. And this caller is in Chicago on our line 4. Hello.
Hi. I have a couple questions. Sure. First, we have a young fruit tree, a peach tree. It was so dry and hot that the leaves actually dried up. And would they come back this year, the leaves, or would that maybe next year?
Well, they certainly, I mean, the majority of trees, if they're healthy, have the ability to re-leaf, to leaf out again. So I would not give up on it by any means. And if you can water it, again, we've been talking about that, but if you can water it periodically, but they have every ability. And we certainly saw that this year with that late frost. I was, you know, I had so many plants, like a lot of people, that just lost that first growth. The new leaves that came out just got fried from that late frost, and they re-leafed. I had my ginkgo was probably the one that I thought, oh my gosh, this big ginkgo, I think, did it die? Because it took it forever to leaf out again. But then it finally did. So there is good news. There is hope. I think I would check the stems. Sometimes the good thing is just to sort of check the stems with your thumbnail and kind of scratch them a little bit. See if it's green underneath.
Oh, I see.
And if it's green underneath, then they have every opportunity to hopefully go ahead and re-leaf.
What, does it take a few weeks or something?
Yes, it will take, yeah.
Oh, okay, and another question. We had some Swiss chard, and the rabbits, we have rabbits, they ate it all up, and we had some other salad greens that were like, I think, escarole or something, and birds ate that. And I'm just wondering, is there any kind of greens that these animals don't like?
Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I know of any greens that they don't like.
Something you can put on them or something?
The best thing, you know, unfortunately, you know, as far as it, trying to use new repellents, we're also eating them. So you don't necessarily want to put repellents on them. And unfortunately, and I know this is not very exciting, but you really have to cage things. And I realize with birds and stuff, you may have to do some other things to try to keep them away. Even things like old CDs and stuff that can kind of flap in the wind. Sometimes that helps a little bit with birds and trying to sort of keep them off of things. At least till they get going. There are things called floating row covers. I don't know if you're familiar with that product.
No.
It's just a white spun bond stuff. And you can get it at most garden centers and stuff will carry it. And you actually just put it over. And since we don't have to worry about lettuce and stuff actually being cross-pollinated or anything like that, we don't care if there's bees around with them. You can actually use that very effectively. And it keeps out insects and rabbits and birds and everything else. So that might be a good way to go.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Uh-huh. All right, thank you. And again to Champaign County, line number 1. Hello.
Hi. I just came from a friend's house. This is the time of year where you end up watering your friend's plants for them. And is there a way that you could communicate how to properly plant a plant in a pot? Because I just come from a place where the lady has 20 pots, and the soil is up to the top of the pot, and there's no dish underneath. And, of course, the patio is one of these patios where a speck of dirt must not fall. And, you know, I'm the granddaughter of a nurseryman, so I was always taught you leave 1 inch from the top of the
Absolutely.
Pot. So that way, yeah, water, you know that the plant's gotten an inch. And instead, this is like Chinese water torture. I mean, you do 3 drops, and you meditate. You 3 drops, and you meditate. And I'm sorry I'm on a rant, but I just came from
I don't blame you. I feel
Thank
your
you.
Frustration. I
and please
feel
communicate
for you.
To teach people how to plant in pots.
You are absolutely right. You have to leave an inch reserve at the top, at least an inch reserve at the top, that will collect that water and give it a chance to go through. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and, well, and you know, it makes it easy. I mean, then you just
yes.
top it off, you're on to the next one.
Right.
But honestly, it took me about 20 to 30 minutes to get everything watered correctly.
Yeah, where it probably would have taken half that time at least to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it was, I would have just, I would have just been able to take a watering can or even a hose on low flow.
Right.
And being able to do everything nice and neat. But it's like, I just don't know what possesses people.
It's just they don't know. You're a very good friend, I might add, and I hope they bring you back a T-shirt or something from wherever they went.
I would hope. I mean, I've noticed that this is starting in, and you know, forgive me, I'm debriefing. honestly, I mean, as I said, leave an inch at the top of the plant.
Good point.
The top of the pot.
Good point. And the other day I had transplanted a rosemary into another pot, and then the soil kind of got bigger, it just expanded more than I thought, and I realized I didn't have that reserve at the top, so I repotted it. I just took it out, repotted it, and did it all over again, and it's worth it. So you're absolutely right.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay,
all
good
right,
luck.
Thank you.
Hopefully
take
they
care.
Won't be gone too long.
And it does, I think, make sense, particularly if you're trying to keep your patio nice or your deck from getting wet. I think when they sell the pots, they also sell little plats, little saucers
yes.
to put under them, which also
Maybe
helps.
There needs to be a line at the pot. It's do not fill above this line on the pot. Kind of a soil line?
I don't know. I think that may be up there with the rules about how big your soft drink can be. I think people need to make this decision for themselves. We have time for some other caller. Somebody wants to call real quick. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Yes.
We do have garden walks coming up. I did want to remind people.
I was wondering about that.
Yes, yes. The Champaign County Master Gardener Garden Walk is June 23rd. It's a Saturday, so it's coming up very quickly. And then the Vermilion County Master Gardener is having their garden walk on June 24th, the next day. So they can check with the U of I Extension office for us and get more info about both of those garden walks. And it really is a great opportunity to see what other people are doing. And I love how different, it's one of those things you go, oh, that's not a garden I would have, but I really think it's beautiful, or yeah. I think it's just a great way to sort of get out of your own garden for a while and enjoy rather than always just having our heads to the ground.
All right. something that I've noticed, I don't know if it's just around where I live, but there seems to be a real proliferation of raised beds going on.
You're right.
And particularly, and there are some people, at least around my neighborhood, where, and I guess maybe the issue is that the only place that they have good sun is in their front.
Right.
So we now have some people who are raising vegetables in raised beds in their front yard, which is fine with me. But, I was kind of wondering about this and wondering about, first of all, wondering what you use to frame your bed and mm-hmm. how worried, do you have to be that whatever the wood that, I guess, but that's what most people are doing, the wood that they're using might be leaching something into the, if what they're doing is they're growing vegetables that they're
right.
going to plan to eat.
Right, right. Well, the good news is just treated wood years ago was treated with arsenic.
Yes.
Not a good thing.
Yes.
And we know that.
Yes.
But that was actually taken off the market in 2001. So it's been a long time now since that was not available. So there's arsenic-coated treated wood is not available anymore. Now the treated wood is treated with copper, which is much safer. And it is one of those things, because I was even concerned about that. There's some leaching or whatever. Is that going to be an issue? And as I talked to a plant physiologist, his comment was copper, plants need copper, small amounts of it. And his comment was the plant, if there's so much copper coming out of this treated lumber, it will kill the plant before you would ever have enough to actually eat that plant. So in other words, plants need copper, but at high doses, copper can be toxic to plants. And that was his comment. So the plants are kind of an indicator. If it's so high, you're never going to have a chance to eat that plant anyway because it's going to be dead because they don't need a ton of copper. So I thought that was a kind of good way to sort of think through that. So treated wood is fine because of that new treated wood is fine. But there's lots of other things you certainly could use. If you don't mind spending a little bit more money, cypress is certainly available. There's other types of woods that you certainly can use on those. Probably railroad ties would probably be the one I would probably stay away from just because of that creosote issue.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Real quick here, someone sends in an email. Would like you to talk a little bit about Japanese maple. They'd like to plant one in their front yard. They're just wondering about, what kind of conditions that they like. Do they have special needs, et cetera?
Yeah, Japanese maples, they're beautiful, wonderful. I would really probably do some homework, because some of the Japanese maple varieties out there now are marginally hardy for us. So just be careful with that. Some of those are much better in Georgia and some of the southern states than they are here. So just to realize that a little bit. The other thing is the best place would be like the east side of a house where they're going to get late afternoon shade. Sun in the morning, late afternoon shade. They're a little finicky. They don't like, the really high heat, direct sun, those kinds of things that would happen with that late afternoon sun. So if you can kind of shade them in the afternoon, that would be better. They like cool, moist soil, so mulching is always good. Keeping them watered, those kinds of things. So once you get them situated, then I think they do really well. If you really don't want to try different varieties, even though there's a ton of cultivars out there, Blood Good is probably the one that's been around for a long time. It has that kind of nice maroony red color to it. It's a little bigger than some of the other ones. It'll certainly get larger, but it tends to be the one I think that's least expensive, tends to be a little tougher plant. So you might think about Blood Good if it's just really one that you're just not sure you want to spend that little extra money.
Yeah. Well, I always think when I see those, I think that they're really just cool plants. They're really so beautiful. I'm not sure that, with my goofy landscaping, it would fit exactly. So even if I have one, I'm not sure where I would put it or whether it would make sense. Although it's just when I see them, I always admire them because I think they're really beautiful and dramatic and beautiful plants.
Sort of think through a little bit on those sort of protected areas where you can keep them out of, a lot of wind and those kind of things. So I think in the right site, they'll do very well for people.
Okay, so we're about to wrap up here. I guess maybe I wouldn't hurt again to remind people, watering. Watering is really important.
Yeah, and really, really think through that a little bit on how are you using your water.
Yeah, and is it okay? I guess I wonder sometimes, too, if, again, you said, identify the plants that really need it most.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay then to do spot watering?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is one of those things that you really have to sort of think through that on certain plants, and spot watering is just fine. It takes more time, obviously, to do those kinds of things. But even if you can give them, a little bit of water, it can help. Depending on how you do it.
So. Yeah, okay.
And I do want to say that this is a very sad occasion for me, David, because after almost 20 years of being with you monthly, I have always enjoyed it. You've always been the gracious host, and I hope I don't start crying here because this really is a sad occasion, and I know you're going on to bigger and better things, but I tell you, I think we're losing someone that's very unique, and that I have always felt that I don't care whether you're talking about health issues or political issues or horticulture or gardening, you have always treated people with respect as listeners and as people that have had calls, and it doesn't seem to matter on what their question is. You always treat it as though it's an important thing to get the right answer. And I don't always see that in a lot of broadcasting. So I just want to thank you very much publicly on what you've done almost, 30 years?
A little more. Give or take a few. Yeah. Well,
we'll miss you, buddy.
I don't want to draw it out, but I'll miss you too. And for the service that you've done for the listeners for all this time, I want to thank you too.
Well, thank you. I've always enjoyed it. It's always been a fun thing being here with you.
All right. Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension.